Hello, and welcome to the Week 8 edition of our Illinois High School Football Podcast. I'm Northwest Herald sports editor Kyle Neighbors. You can find me on Twitter at Kyle Neighbors. And joining me once again are Northwest Herald sports writer Joe Stevenson. You can find him on Twitter at NWH_JoePrepZone. And our state football expert here at Shaw Media, Steve Soucy. And of course, you can find him on Twitter at TheSeuss. Seuss, I'm looking over your latest playoff projections that you've been pouring over here the last couple days, and there are several things that are really catching my eye. Of course, Class 8A, much like last year, looks pretty insane. We're talking potential Palatine and Huntley in the first round. Things are going to be crazy again, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it just really looks like, you know, over time we're going to cultivate this class into about, you know, 20 or 25 power teams. And then, of course, logically, when you're at this 1 to 32 bracketing system and you're going to have a couple of really good teams that slide down with 2 to 3 losses, it's going to get messy, and it's happening again. I don't really know what the fix is. I mean, I like the 1 to 32 bracketing system, but it's still going to lead to some of these car crashes, if you will, in the first round.
Steve, I like the 1 to 32 also. I'm glad that they do that. I think the dividing it into 2 16 halves, it's okay, but I think the 1 for 32, I just think it makes it a better tournament. I understand why the IHSA doesn't do it with all classes because of the travel aspect, but I really like the 1 through 32.
Well, it really made no sense to keep doing it in 7 and 8A to break them into 16s because of the fact that, I mean, you might have possibly three teams tops that are basically outside of Chicagoland in both of those classes. So, I mean, you're really just in the old situation just seemed kind of silly to me. But this has led to some interesting matchups, and it gives you an opportunity to look ahead a little bit easier and see what the brackets are going to look like without having to speculate on where a random geographic line might be placed.
By the way, Palatine was at Huntley 3 years ago in the first round.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
You get a lot of situations in this where you're going to get some repeat matchups. You're probably going to get some games where two teams that may have even played each other during the regular season run into one another, but it's still a lot less likely in the 1 to 32 than it is the 1 to 16.
Seuss, we mentioned Palatine and Huntley. Were there any other games in 8A when you were putting this together, this projection together, that you went, oh, come on, that's not even fair?
Well, I mean, there's several every time that, I mean, it's one of these kind of ridiculous situations when you're looking at everybody that's involved. I mean, every year I'm fascinated, since we've gone to 1 to 32, to look at the 16-17 game, and it never, ever disappoints me. It always seems to be projected as a game that looks like on paper it would just be outstanding, and this is no different. This week's projection, I have Naperville North and Bolingbrook in the 17-16 game. So, I mean, that's right where the bracket divides, but that's two really good football teams in a game where their reward is they likely get to go play the top seed. So it's just crazy.
So, you know, the projections change week to week, obviously.
Yeah.
But we kind of know at this point kind of how the field is shaping up. But one of the things that's always interesting to see is how the results each week affect the class breaks, where you have the smallest and largest teams in each class. Now, Glenbird West, Morris, and Centralia kind of spring to mind as teams that have been on that bubble. How did Week 7 change the outlooks of some of these teams that are bouncing between the classes right on that line?
Well, the biggest thing that happened this week and why there was such a significant shift in the middle of the field is three or four teams popped up, I don't want to say out of nowhere, but picked off wins that I wasn't quite expecting them to get, which took them from being either out of the field or kind of on the fringe of the field to definitely in the field. So room had to be made for those teams, and all of those teams were from classes above 5A. So what happens is when you're creating slots, typically what happens is you got to create those spaces to make room, and those teams this week, for the record, De La Salle, who beat Mount Carmel in a game that really surprised me, cemented their spot in the field. Bloom took advantage of 8 turnovers against Kankakee, cemented their spot in the field. And then St. Ignatius beat Aurora Christian, which surprised me a little bit, and cemented their spot. So you got two 6A teams and an 8A team that needed to find spots in the field, and they replaced teams, small school teams. So what happens is the field starts shifting down again. So teams that were on that 5-4A bubble starts to slide into 4A. The 4A, 3A bubble, they slide into 3A. So that's what happened this week that caused that. This tends to happen once a year. There's one week that we have a lot of upheaval in the field because of these, I guess, upstarts, you could call them. And this was the week that it happened this week. I knew there was going to be some changes in this week's field simply because of all the undefeated matchups that we had. And if I don't project all of those right, there's going to be some wild swings in the seeds. But the thing that really changed things was, like I said, mentioning those teams that kind of came out of nowhere and took those spots. And then conversely, there were some small schools that didn't win this week that kind of needed to, and then they lost their slots. So all of that ended up happening, and then what you saw was a big push. You asked me last week at this time what class is Morris going to be, 5A, 4A. I would have said I'm about 75% confident that Morris is going to be in 5A. You asked me today, I'm changing it entirely. I'm saying I'm 75% confident Morris is going to be in 4A.
Yes, speaking of Morris, we were rather surprised to see them lose to Kalen this week. I got a question for you in regards to this. Did Morris losing actually give them a higher chance to end up in 4A? Because doesn't this now put Kalen in play to get back in the field at what? I think Kalen would be 5A. Is that another team that would push Morris down into 4A?
Yeah, it does. And that's one of the things that makes this whole system chaotic. And then on top of that, then you have to take into the fact that now Kalen and Geneseo are kind of grappling for a spot. But Kalen could still lose that game to Geneseo, get in, and then Geneseo would get a spot, and then that pushes it the other way. So there are all these little things that are in play here that you just kind of have to wait for it to ferret out. But if you're just trying to project what happens, it becomes kind of a ridiculous Gordian's knot that you're trying to untangle, and it's very difficult to try to figure out. And that's just with one scenario in one conference. There are conferences all over the state that have these little quirk games in here that are very difficult to figure out. And that's what makes this a very arduous project at times. But it's still, like you said, it actually, you can look at it that way. If the intent, and I'm sure it wasn't, this is conspiracy theory at its finest. If the intent was to figure out a way to get Morris into 4A, you could actually perceive that the Kalen loss helps that process.
That's what I thought that would happen. Joe, you'll enjoy this projection from Seuss. He's got number 10 DeKalb at number 7 Cary Grove in 6A. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it?
It does. I know who else would really enjoy that. I think Cary Grove would, to get another shot at DeKalb after DeKalb took the Trojans out in the quarterfinals last year. We were all up here, up this way, kind of expecting to see the Cary Grove Prairie Ridge rematch from the opener last year, which was a good game, and we were kind of expecting to see that in the semifinal last year, and then DeKalb squashed that in the quarterfinals. I got to give DeKalb a lot of credit. I thought Cary Grove was really playing at a high level and was going to win that game, and they went over there and DeKalb took it to him pretty good. So I think Cary Grove wouldn't mind getting another shot at DeKalb this year. I think they'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I think it'd be a good matchup, too.
I think it would.
Now, Seuss, well, for all of our readers out there, if you haven't, Seuss writes a weekly recap that runs in the Northwest Herald, Joliet Herald, DeKalb Chronicle, every week, kind of breaking down what happened and where things stand. In his breakdown this week, he had 19 teams at 5-4 missing the playoff. Seuss, where exactly do you have that point cut right now, and which team should be really sweating?
Well, the hardest thing about this right now is there's so many teams that are playing out-of-state teams that actually have an impact on where teams are seated and who might actually get into the field. Right now, I'm fairly confident that anyone who finishes with 38 or more points is in the field. End of discussion. You've made it. 37-point teams, you have to go through the second stage tiebreaker and go through a lot of things to figure out exactly who gets in. But I mean, as we get farther and farther along, that number seems to shrink in regards to how many teams are going to be 5-4 and better. And usually what that means is that the point total slides down a little bit. That hasn't happened this year. We've been consistently at 37-38 all year long, which leads me to believe that's probably where it's going to end up. I would say 38-point teams are good to go, but I wouldn't sit there and say – I wouldn't start printing playoff tickets if I were them just yet. I think you have to look at it and say, okay, you've got a really good chance to get in if you're at 38. 39s, I think you're good to go. But, I mean, there are some teams out there right now that are sitting around that bubble. Tinley Park is one that comes to mind. They've got some issues. Kirkland, Hiawatha, a little 1A school, is actually sitting and probably waiting on results from a team that they played from Michigan, and that's going to directly determine who gets into the field for them. That's very interesting. Crystal Lake Central, originally I kind of had them on the bubble points-wise, but it looks like they're going to get to 39, barring something strange happening to them. So they're in pretty good shape. Lake Forest, another team that's kind of hovering around that area at 30. You know, I have them projected at 39 right now, or 38. So there's a lot of teams that are right around that, but I think my best guess for all estimations is that once you're clear of 38 and beyond it, you're pretty much good to go. 38 might be a little iffy depending on how things go, but anything below 38, you better start sweating.
Joe, we're going to talk about this on our Northwest Herald podcast tomorrow, but this sounds like good news for Crystal Lake Central, because they're right now, as Sue said, looks like 39 points, but we're actually a little more concerned after this last week, because to get to 39, they're depending on Cary Grove taking care of business against South Elgin. And originally we thought, okay, that's no problem. Cary Grove's going to take care of South Elgin. But South Elgin was right there with Batavia, who I think all three of us consider to be a really, really good football team. What do you think of this matchup?
I think it could be a really good matchup. South Elgin also beat West Aurora by a similar margin of what Huntley did. And the Huntley-Cary Grove game, Huntley beat Cary Grove by 9. That was a pretty good game too. So yeah, I think this is going to be could be a real entertaining game Saturday. I think Cary Grove will win, but South Elgin looks like that's a team that's been getting some votes in 8A, and you know, to play Batavia that tough, the Storm is pretty tough.
Yeah, Seuss, did South Elgin kind of catch you by surprise this week, keeping it that close?
The one thing that played out the way that I kind of expected was I really like Batavia's defense a lot. South Elgin's obviously a very, very good offensive team, and Batavia's defense held them to 7 points. So that's a nod to Batavia once again. But I think South Elgin is the kind of team that has feasted on some pretty inferior opponents and still scored some against some pretty good teams. So I think for Cary Grove, it all comes down to whether or not they're able to kind of rein in that South Elgin offense a little bit. And I think they can based on previous results. So it should be a very interesting game. But like you said, it's really important for teams like Crystal Lake Central to get that point from Cary Grove. It's something that a lot of people don't notice a lot in the shuffle. But when you're one of those teams in the high 30s right now, which Crystal Lake Central is, that point's going to be very valuable for them. So if Cary Grove gets that done, they probably owe him a thank you card of some kind.
Yeah, the good thing for Crystal Lake Central as far as trying to be the fifth team to qualify out of the Fox Valley Conference is that the conference is so good and they have that crossover thing going. Most of their crossovers are with Upstate Illini, or not, I'm sorry, Upstate 8 teams. And the only non-conference loss for the FVC was Burlington Central beating
Hampshire,
Burlington Central from the Kishwaukee River. So, you know, the FVC has kind of owned that crossover deal that it has going with Upstate 8. So that bodes well for Central.
Yeah, when you look at that on a larger scale, I tend to look at this as it's something when I'm tabulating points. The Fox Valley in general is arguably the strongest conference in the state when you base it on how many teams are in the conference and how many total wins they are apt to have at the end of the season. If you break that down by average, which is something that I do just for the heck of it, it really doesn't have any real value in terms of putting together the playoffs. I just like to know what it is. The Fox Valley, you're right, has dominated their crossover schedules, and that's extremely critical for the teams trying to get at-large berths, and it really helps out a lot come seed time.
Yeah, I think last year the only team that lost in those crossovers was Huntley losing to a really good West Aurora team.
Yeah, and that's over the last couple of years, that's kind of been where this conference has made its hay, because if you can get through there in a situation where, you know, every week you're winning, you're getting a certain number of points from your other conference members that are beating, that are winning their in-conference games, and then when you're picking up that extra point nearly every week from the non-conference crossover, it's invaluable in the process.
Well, you had talked about that earlier, Steve. You said, you know, if you're getting 4 points a week, you might be okay, but if you're getting 5 a week, you should be good. And that's, I mean, because it's a 9-team conference, so they're getting those 4, and then they're getting that 5th one that you were talking about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that hinges a lot on, you know, how many wins you have at the time and whether or not you're winning or losing. But if you do take a loss somewhere to a team like that, the one consolation is that you're almost guaranteed to pick up 5 for that week. So that's a big plus in the department of the teams that are going to sit around 6-3 and 5-4 and need those points not only to get into the field, but to kind of separate themselves from the other teams that are also at those same records. Because if you're a 6-3 team, I mean, you might get a 10 or an 11 seed in the bracket, but there's a chance you could climb as high as 8 or 9 if you have more playoff points than all of the other 6-3s. And being in the Fox Valley, having that benefit of picking up those extra points here and there, it adds up over the course of the season, and it usually ends up giving them maybe a better seed by 1 or 2 almost every single time.
All right. Well, before we get into our games of the week, Seuss, give us a quick rundown of what's important this week.
Well, right now, what you really start have to zeroing in on is looking at the teams that currently have a 4-3 record, or in some cases a 3-4 record with a favorable schedule, because those are the teams that are going to have an impact on what happens at the end of the day in regards to who gets in and who doesn't. I mean, we are still down to, you know, over 70 teams that currently have a 4-3 record, which means essentially they need one more win out of the last 2 weeks to get themselves into the conversation. That seems like a lot, but if you look at that list and look at who they have left, there's some teams on that list that probably aren't going to make it because their remaining schedule is pretty difficult. One of them that stands out to me right now that I question whether or not they're going to make the playoffs, I think Mount Carmel is in dire straits with their remaining schedule. They've got Montini and Providence left on their schedule. They're currently 4-3. Another one is Thornton. They still got to play Bowling Brook and Lincoln Way Central on their schedule. So looking at those 4-3 teams and seeing how they do this week and seeing the teams that drop to 4-4 and basically put themselves with their backs against the wall heading into week 9, there usually are about 50 teams that are 4-4 heading into week 9. So it'll be interesting to see who those teams are and who they have in week 9. So for me, that's where I'm focusing a lot of my attention. Surprisingly, there are so few games this week that involve, after having so many early in the season, I guess we used them all up. There are so many, so few games that have, an undefeated team playing another undefeated team. That's probably because we're running out of undefeated teams.
Yeah, we are.
But even say, for example, 7-0, 6-1 games, there aren't a lot of those either. So a lot of the intrigue for me in this week's field are the 4-3 teams. And like I said, in a few 3-4 teams that look like they can run the table, but maybe have a coin flip game this week that will determine whether or not they stay alive.
Okay, Joe, what do you got for game of the week?
So for game of the week, I'm going to stick in our backyard here, Kyle. I'm going to go with 6-1 Niles Notre Dame at 3-4 Marion Central. Last year we saw Marion had to win 2 of its last 3 games. No, I'm sorry, its last 2 games. How'd that work? Yeah, last 2 games on the road to get into the playoffs at 5-4, and then made it to the 5A quarterfinals. Marion is just—it's just been a struggle all year from week 3 on. That Bennett game when they lost quarterback Gavin Scott. They lost running back Brian Niemczyk. They lost wide receiver Patsy Ricciardi and another lineman. And it's just been a struggle with so many guys hurt. You know, Marion has to win these last two. And if the Hurricanes could do that, I still think they could, they have a team that could do something in 5A. This is going to be a really tough game, though. Niles is pretty solid.
Okay, and I'm going to take Loyola and Providence. Providence has been hot after an 0-2 start. I'm interested to see how this one plays out. Seuss, which way are you leaning there?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I think Loyola is finally almost up to full health, and that's a dangerous thing. This is a good, deep team, but I really like what Providence is doing. After they started the season 0-2, they have played gangbusters football, so I think you picked a really good one there. It was one that I considered as well, but I would lean towards Loyola. Would not be the least bit surprised if Providence won.
Hey, Steve, where do you have Providence right now? Do you think that it would be 6A or 7A?
Providence is a 6A and fairly secure in that notion. So they're a team right now that, I mean, if they lose this game, they're probably going to finish the regular season with a 6-3 record, which gives them a very, I guess, deceiving seed type of situation, because it's probably going to be a double-digit seed. So, and they are not a double-digit team. That there's no doubt about that. So they're a very dangerous team in the bracket as a 6A team. There's no doubt about that.
Do you think that they'll wind up on the south side of 6A or north?
Yeah, I think when you look at the way 6A is breaking down, I would kind of think that just a real rough way of doing it is any team that you kind of consider to be in the south suburbs is leaning towards being in the south bracket. The line right now for the existing teams at 6A kind of draws around 95th Street on the map. So that tells anybody south of that line is looking to be in the south bracket, and obviously Providence is clearly below that line. So I would think it's almost assured that they're going to be in the 6A south.
All right, Seuss, what's your game of the week?
Well, there were a lot of them that I considered, but I'm going to go back to the conference that I fully don't understand, never seem to understand the results that happen on a week-to-week basis, and can't predict them to save my life. So I'm not going to offer a game prediction. I'm just going to say that I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens when Wheaton North plays Naperville Central. So I don't want to say I've ignored Wheaton North this year, but I've kind of looked at their schedule and said, they're pretty good, but I think they're going to lose this week. And I keep saying that, and they keep winning. So I think basically what I've come to the conclusion of is they're a darn good football team. So, and I think Naperville Central is very good as well. A little bit of a surprising loss to Naperville North this week, but I need to stop saying surprising loss when it comes to regards to anyone in the DuPage Valley, because there are so many good teams in that league that, and this is so cliche, but on any given week, you can lose to any other team in that league, up and down that league. We're talking, I mean, eight of the nine teams in that league are certainly playoff worthy, and they're probably only going to get four. So that says something to the strength of that league. They're just knocking one another out of this mix and adding up losses on teams that I think in any other league would probably be flourishing.
Hey, Steve, the game you picked last week, I believe, wasn't it Marist and Naz?
Yeah.
What did you think of that when you saw that score? You said you wanted to see, you were waiting to see something from Marist. I guess you saw it, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw it most definitely. I mean, I had mentioned that I had questioned the quality of their schedule at that point because they had really only played one team all season that had more than three wins on the year, and that team was from Indiana, and I didn't know that much about them. So I kind of questioned the quality of that schedule. I guess playing a quality schedule didn't matter too much to Marist. They're a very good football team and really, really knocked the heck out of Nazareth last week. I'll admit that I thought Marist would win the game. I was stunned by the score, absolutely stunned.
Well, there we go. Look at that. Seuss admitting that maybe underestimated a really good Marist squad here, huh?
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, that's like I said, I was a little I'd been a little reluctant when putting together the power rankings every week. If I had maybe had them a little bit too high, I'm not questioning that anymore.
All right. Well, that'll wrap it up here in week 8 for us. Look forward to talking to you guys in week 9, and we'll talk to you then.